Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hey everyone, we're still out on maternity leave. This week we're bringing you a double feature re-release of our coverage on the hashtag Free Britney movement.
Britney is still under the conservatorship and control of her dad. The New York Times just released a documentary, Framing Britney Spears, which features video footage spanning the many years of this restrictive arrangement.
This episode covers Britney's early years, all the way through the actions that caused her dad to petition for a conservatorship.
After checking out these throwback episodes, you can head over to our Patreon for some bonus content like our mini-sodes, including our update on the Free Britney movement that was released just after these episodes. We also have other bonus content like mixed bags, wheel segments, and Am I the Asshole questions, where Reddit users ask whether they're acting like assholes and we judge them.
Enjoy the episode. Thanks so much, and keep it creepy.
Starting with her pigtailed debut, she rocketed to stardom as one of the biggest pop stars of all time. At first, all her dreams seemed to be coming true, but behind the scenes, things weren't going so well for this icon. A divorce, a custody battle, stints in the hospital for mental health reasons, and then finally, her rights were stripped away via an allegedly temporary legal mechanism. A decade later, the conservatorship remains. How could a pop legend end up with her every move controlled? This week's episode is The Free Britney Movement, Part 1.
In the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed. You'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinister Hood.
I'm gonna kill you.
I have a very important question.
Please.
What is your favorite Britney song?
Okay, I've been solidly listening to Britney since we decided to. I will tell you what, listening to Britney Spears is like a jolt. It's better than a cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. If I'm feeling sluggish at my desk, put my headphones on. I love Toxic,
yeah.
Obviously.
I've had Toxic and Circus stuck in my head all day, but I'm going back and forth in between those two.
I think later Britney stuff is not as appreciated as it should have been.
Oh, was it Glory that came out in, like 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
That one was very good with Slumber Party and stuff on. Slumber Party is a banger.
She's got, I mean, even her B-side tracks, I think, are still good. But the embarrassing thing about me is probably my favorite song is She's So Lucky.
I love that song.
So much. I love the video. I love the song.
That song's great.
I had this Shamrock print photo album, and I got some stickers from Michaels and I wrote out She's So Lucky on the photo album. Did you know I dressed as Britney Spears for Halloween when I was a child?
I did not. Like, what did you wear?
I was probably 12 or 13. Inappropriately, I wore a skirt, sports bra, and then like a white t-shirt tied up with it, and then put my hair in pigtails.
Oh, so you were sporting the look from the video of my favorite Britney song.
Oh, really?
Which is Baby One More Time. Yes.
Gotta go with the hit, the classic.
I've been thinking about this a lot over the past few days. And if, like, that song is a jolt to me. And it's just, like, I feel like it has everything. It mm-hmm. was, like, the beginning of her career. The video is iconic, although perhaps a bit, I don't know. She was, what, 16? So, yeah, maybe not the best choice. Apparently, it was her idea, though. They wanted it to be a lot more tame. And she was like, no, this is me. But it just, I don't know. It's just so catchy and it has everything. And like, if you hear that song, you're like, oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, it's a legend. It's the one where it's like, and you're like, fuck
yeah.
Everyone starts cheering.
If somebody sings it at karaoke or anything.
When she first came out, though, I did not like her. I think it's because it's like,
were
one
you
of those
a Christina fan?
Yes.
Is that why
I
you didn't
Christina
like
Aguilar.
Britney?
Yeah, I had Genie in a Bottle. I was like, Team Christina. And then it's like, we shouldn't pit women against each other. We can all love
that's true.
All kinds of things. But this guy, I was watching music videos and then also live performance videos of her. So then I started watching Backstreet Boys videos. I was making Paris watch. AJ's on Dancing with the Stars right now.
I know.
And then we went down another rabbit hole of groomsmen dances at weddings is like a thing now where where you're supposed to like go get the garter from the woman. Well, instead of just getting the garter, the guy will be like, wait a minute. And then music will start and he'll do a dance, or more likely him and all his groomsmen will do a choreographed dance, which goes either one crew out of Paris was like, they have to have been like in a dance group together, or like maybe they were on a cheer team or something together. And the other side is like, so cringy.
Well, here's another reason for me to renew my vows.
Yes,
I demand a flash mob groomsman dance.
Full dance. The only thing is, like, I would say 50% of them end in genuine My Pony in the post Magic Mike era.
No.
And then, I kept going, their families are there.
Yeah.
And Paris was like, calm down. I was like, their mother can see him jiggling his genitalia.
Yeah, I want it to be like funny.
It was like Uptown Funk or whatever. And then I showed Paris the Evolution of Dance video from like a million years ago on the internet. You know, I'm talking about the guy in the... Paris is like, this is so funny. What
He's
is this?
He's never seen that?
No.
Is he from the past?
I was like, where you just lived in California. It's not even like you're from...
I think that's where they get things first.
I know. Yeah, he did not... he had never seen it. But it's, you know what?
That's an impressive video.
Still good.
Yeah.
Still good. Well... No one can dance like Britney. She's the most amazing.
Well, I'm going to disagree because I think Beyonce is a much better
dancer. Oh, yeah, that's true.
But Britney is still very good.
I thought of this while I was walking around my house with my headphones on listening to Britney Spears. I was like, Britney walked so like Beyonce and Katy Perry and Lady Gaga could run. You know what I mean? Like, it just gets like Madonna was great, but Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera were better. And Britney Spears and Christina were great, but like Lady Gaga and Beyonce are better. You know, it's just like.
Do you think Madonna, you think Britney's better than Madonna?
I mean,
I'm going to take the opposite side.
I mean,
there.
When you start looking into Madonna, she literally just went into the gay and black community and stole a bunch of stuff. So,
well,
like, what's revolutionary?
I mean, that can be said of a lot of people. Yeah. But I think as far as like iconic figures, I think Madonna probably trumps Brit. I think Madonna. Walk so Britney could run.
Yes, for sure. They all stand on the shoulders of the icons that came before
them. Yeah, definitely. Well, I don't know if we've ever had more requests for an episode than this one.
Constant DMs,
Facebook, emails. Oh my goodness. There's carrier pigeons.
There's the
sky writings.
Yeah, I was going to say the airplane with the banner.
Yeah, so we... This could have been a serial podcast, quite honestly, and there are those out there on her life and in this movement, but we're breaking it up into two parts. So we're going to talk about her early career in life in this one and when things started to spiral out of control all the way up until the conservatorship. And then the next episode will really focus a lot on the conservatorship and the Free Britney movement, which has taken over social media. And all the conspiracies, or sounds like they're not really conspiracies at this point. It's just straight up fact of what's going on with her. I will say, I have like so many where we start doing research on stuff. I have a newfound respect and wish I could go back to past Christy and say, you don't know what's going on in her life. So don't judge her.
It's true.
Because, like...
What's that saying? Like, everybody be kind because everyone's fighting a battle you don't
know? Mm-hmm. The 2007 VMA Awards. Oh, Christ. That performance makes me sweat just thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And she was so criticized for it. But when you find out, oh, she just lost custody of her kids. You don't know what she was going through mentally, what medication she's on to just try and get on that stage and fulfill her contract and duties at all. So yeah, it's this is one of those where once you really start looking into it, you realize just how taken advantage of she has been since she was a little girl.
Yeah.
And it's quite sad.
It makes me want to just be friends with her and be like, I got you. We're not going to let them put you on stage. We will never let them do that to you. Not to sound like I looked up that Chris Crocker fella from the Leave Britney Alone video, and I told you, Revelation, did not know he was a comedian. I thought that was legit.
Well, he was doing a good bit. He sold the bit.
He was amazing. He was a good actor, but I mean, it didn't really.
It rings true, though. We should all, people look at celebrities, I think, a lot of times like they're not real people. And you can, like, they still check their Instagram accounts. They still see all the mean things that people say about them. They read reviews of, they're just normal people. They just happen to have a lot more money than most of us and a lot of fame. But it doesn't mean that the things that people say don't cut them to the core, just like everybody else.
Yeah, it's like, people don't live in a vacuum. You know, unless David Sedaris talks about he totally, like, really will not Google himself. But he's like, it sucks when I'm accidentally on something and you see
that
a thing and you're
like, I go out of my way to not look at anything.
Same.
But if something accidentally pops up, I'm like, well, and, you know, most of the time it's good. But if you see something that isn't good, everyone hurts the same. Was that an R.E.M. song? When
that's right.
So, yeah, all that to be said, whether it's just a person on Facebook or Britney Spears, everybody just be cool, be kind.
Yeah.
Think about, do I need to really post this mean thing? Do I need to write this rude review? Or could I maybe just go about my day without saying anything at all?
I could also just not. I had that feeling the other day, though, because I had really good vegan nachos from that place in Garland, and I've been really obsessed with the local pizza. And I thought, people really statistically leave bad reviews more often than good ones. Yeah. And so I went and left very nice reviews for both of those.
That's very nice.
That helps them stay in business because I really love
pizza. Is this the Flattery?
The Flattery in Dallas is the best pizza I've had in my whole life. And I used to live in Chicago. It makes me cry thinking about it. I just had a full dinner and I would still eat a full Flattery pizza.
I got to try it because you've been talking about this place for weeks now.
I'm addicted. It's the toppings.
Yep. You said it's the cheese. Well,
buffalo mozzarella.
Yeah. Oh, man. My fave. Well, let's get into this. I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And here's Brittany. Bitch. Brittany Jean Spears was born on December 2nd, 1981, in Macomb, Mississippi, the second child of Lynn Irene Bridges and James Parnell Spears. Soon, her family moved to Kentwood, Louisiana, where Brittany's parents enrolled her in dance lessons at age 3, after having discovered what a naturally talented child she was. Just 2 years later, she stole the spotlight when she performed What Child Is This to her classmates and their parents at her kindergarten graduation. That's a big song to sing for a 4 or 5 year old.
That's a lot of words to remember and on pitch, and that's going to take a lot of practice.
Yeah. When we tried to take Ella to dance class, she screamed uncontrollably to the point where we had to remove her from the class, and then she just went outside and sat on the sidewalk and wouldn't let us near her. So it went a different route.
That's a whole mood right there. I know that feeling.
And I was like, what child is this? Just to Tommy. Having been in singing, dancing, and gymnastics classes for several years, Brittany's mother, Lynn, believed her daughter was destined for even more. It appeared Brittany agreed, saying of her child and ambition in an interview with Rolling Stone,
I was in my own world. I found out what I'm supposed to do at an early age.
I always wonder with child stuff like this, did you or do you think you did?
Well, and two, you may get, like, we all trade in currency, right? And so, you know, the things that make you feel good. And for me, it was always, like, my parents' approval. And, like, I hated getting in trouble. I wanted my teachers to like me. I want my parents to, like, authority figures was, like, but for a kid who, when you're 5, you sing What Child Is This? And everyone cheers. Mm-hmm. Then you're like, oh, when they cheer at me, that's good. And I'm worth something. Sure. And so then, and your parents are encouraging you that you sort of start to think, well, that's how I feel good, is to get people to cheer at me. And you don't find that satisfaction, you know, within yourself, which I've had to struggle with, is finding of, like, it doesn't matter the approval of other people. You have to love yourself first. So it's a long journey. And to be 15, 16 and be like, is this what you want to do? And you're like, uh-huh. It's like, do you really have the capacity to consent to that?
And I mean, I loved performing my whole life. So I can understand that I would have rather been on stage, probably not singing because I'm not a good singer, but acting or something at a young age rather than going to just traditional school.
I hated Amanda Bynes because I was like, I am funnier than her and I should be on all that. That's my life. I should be with Kenan
Thompson. That's how I feel about a lot of TV shows. I'm like, how did this fucking get cast? Why am I not on TV? Heather and I should have a show. We could do something so much better than what's on there right now.
I mean.
But I remember I had a friend in middle school who was a dancer and she had dance practice every single night for hours, like 3-4 hours. And I would always be like, don't you get tired of it? She was like, no, not when you love it so much. But I'm always, I don't know, now that I'm older, I'm like, did she love it so much? Or was she kind of being forced to go do this? I don't know. I think with a lot of these things, you start off really liking it because it's fun. But then at some point it becomes work and you're a kid and you're like, I just want my life back.
Yeah, I want to go play and throw rocks at my friends or whatever you do. That's what I do.
Throw rocks at your friends. I want to go have fun and throw rocks at my friends. Well, 3 years after her singing debut, when Brittany was 8, Lynn took her daughter from their hometown of Kentwood, Louisiana, to Atlanta to audition for the revival of the Mickey Mouse Club. Unfortunately, little Brittany was rejected for being too young for the show. But this didn't stop Lynn. After meeting a New York talent agent at the audition, she moved her daughter to the Big Apple to pursue their showbiz dreams. It was here Brittany began taking acting classes at the Professional Performing Arts School located in Hell's Kitchen.
I mean, it's what a little kid like me and you that like to perform and have attention, this is what you think you want.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Did you watch the Mickey Mouse Club? I loved it.
I didn't watch it.
You didn't watch it?
No, not really. I wonder if we didn't have that kind of cable, you know, like that, well, you also, that channel.
Well, I guess she's closer to my age than yours. Because what, she's 39, right? 37 right now?
She's born in 81, yeah.
Okay.
She's a couple years
old. Yeah. I loved the Mickey Mouse Club.
Really?
Yeah.
With the JT and Carrie Felicity?
Yes.
I told you we went to Chicago and Carrie Russell was doing an interview out in the park.
For Felicity?
You know, they had Felicity, yeah.
Oh,
they had
love Felicity. That's one of my all-time favorite shows.
She's cut her hair and we were there with my friend Franklin and he was like, Felicity!
I love Felicity.
Screaming Felicity. And you could tell she just like did not, because she was like, I cut my hair. That's not me anymore. I don't do that show anymore. You could tell she was just like, would you?
Well, she cut her hair on the show. It was a big transition. Yeah. I love Felicity so much. Oh my gosh. That show, that and My So-Called Life are like, oh, I could talk about them for days. Well, after an early appearance on Star Search in 1991, where she lost to a 12-year-old named Marty Thomas, Brittany was finally cast on the Mickey Mouse Club in 1992, alongside the fresh faces of Christina Aguilera, Justin Timberlake, Ryan Gosling, and Carrie Russell. Their 4-year run was fun, but in 96, the club was closed for good, and Brittany was forced back into a regular life. She returned to Macomb, Mississippi, where she attended Park Lane Academy for high school. While Brittany was popular, she still yearned to perform, telling Rolling Stone that high school was like,
the opening scene in Clueless with all the cliques. I was so bored. I was the point guard on the basketball team. I had my boyfriend. I went to homecoming and Christmas formal, but I wanted more.
I was also very big fan of Star Search.
Oh, really?
Did you not watch Star Search? Oh, my gosh. No. I'm so surprised by both of these revelations. I think you would have loved Star Search.
Yeah, I think Mickey Mouse Club I just missed because of the timing. I was more into like Kenan and Kel and all that and stuff on Nickelodeon. But Star Search, I remember it being on, but I don't remember. Again, probably a lot of my life has just been fueled by petty jealousy of like, it should be me on that stage.
Well, you know who else was on Star Search at a very young age?
Who?
And also, I don't think she won. Beyonce.
Beyonce?
Mm-hmm.
So it turns out Star Search was a flop.
Well,
and Justin Timberlake was on there.
Was he? See, I mean, like, and it's so crazy that, like, Disney had they had the foresight to be like, you know what? All of these people are successes. And you're like, you know what? They sure are. They all went on to have, like, crazy successful careers in their own right. It's so weird that on competition shows, so many times the people that come in second have the better career.
It's true.
Yeah. So many times on,
American Idol.
Yeah. It's not America's Got Talent. American Idol and everything. Yeah. The second place people, because sometimes those contracts are so messy that the people that get them kind of get screwed.
Yeah. You get locked into doing bad shit that you don't want to do.
Eager to get back on stage, Brittany began talks to join Innocence, an all-girl group. However, after speaking with her entertainment lawyer in New York, Larry Rudolph, she decided to go the solo route. Rudolph provided Brittany with an unused Toni Braxton song she could use as a demo. After recording it, Rudolph began shopping Brittany around to various record labels. And in 1997, Jive Records, home of the greatest boy band of all time, the Backstreet Boys, signed the promising young songstress. Years later, Innocence would open for Britney on tour before breaking up in 2002.
Sometimes I'll add editorial notes in my notes to you, and then Christy kind of decides what's in the final script. And man, I love when she leaves and stuff like that.
That is, of course, how was I going to take that out? These are your boys. I love them too. It's Jive Records. They're no more, I believe. They have since dissolved, but they had some hit makers.
Oh, yeah. It was a machine just turning them out.
Mm-hmm. In the spring of 1998, a 16-year-old Brittany was flown to Sweden to work with legendary pop music producers Max Martin and Dennis Pop, where she recorded her first album, Baby One More Time. Released on January 12, 1999, the album went on to sell over 10 million copies, was the biggest-selling album ever by a teenage artist, one of the best-selling albums of all time, and the best-selling first album by any artist ever, according to Zimbio.
I mean, when she came out, it was a rocket ship. Yep. It was just everyone was singing that song. Mm-hmm. It was like it became a part of the culture.
Yeah.
Oh, it was like
immediate
parodied.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. With the success of her first album and its number one hit single, Baby One More Time, Britney was officially solidified as one of the biggest pop stars of the decade. The accompanying music video was an MTV staple, with her flirty Catholic schoolgirl outfit skyrocketing her into sex symbol status, a drastic change from her earlier image as sweet and innocent. Years later, the number one hit would be the last song to be played on the very last episode of MTV's TRL with Carson Daly, a show on which Britney was regularly featured. Her rise to fame also landed Britney her first major gig as the opening act for the 1998 NSYNC tour, Second to None.
What did we ever figure out how they established what order the songs were played on TRL? Was it people calling in? Was that how it went? Total Request Live.
Yeah.
You had to call it in. I always wonder if it was rigged. If you guys know anybody that worked at MTV,
if you're Carson Daly,
call in Carson Daly. I would get so mad when the Backstreet Boys would be unseated as like number one. I was like, this show is a lie.
I know I watched it. I know for a fact I watched it, but I can't remember. What is that? It was like the top hits of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They would play like the top 10 music videos that were requested, and then in between, like interview people or do bits and talk and stuff.
Yes. And she was on it a ton because her songs were number one a ton. Britney once again struck gold in 2000 with her second album, Oops, I Did It Again, which broke the Nielsen SoundScan record for the highest debut sales by a solo artist and remains one of the best selling albums of all time, according to Pop Culture. The following year saw one of the most iconic MTV VMA performances of all time, when Britney flawlessly performed her hit, I'm a Slave for You, with a 7-foot albino Burmese python draped over her shoulders. While the epic performance drew scorn from PETA, as it also featured a caged tiger, wrangled by famed tiger keeper Doc Antle, featured on Tiger King, it also launched Britney into another level of stardom, with fans marveling at her abilities as a performer.
That at the time, we were talking about this the other day.
Yeah.
It was like jaw-dropping, show-stopping. We were just, and then you watch it now, and I was like, that someone needs to take that python away.
Yeah.
She slapped a person in the face with a python.
That python looks real bummed out. That tiger looks real drugged. It is, at the time, and like we said to ourselves in our Facebook thread the other day, so much stuff that like went on back then. I'm glad we've kind of turned a corner with some stuff.
Yes.
Like that part, that's now people would be a lot more hesitant to do something like that. But at the time, it was not only the animals involved, but her outfit, first of all, body, banging.
Flawless.
It's insane. But at one point she has, Banana is the python's name, draped over her shoulder, and she does like three pirouettes before handing it off.
Yes, it's tail. She does a spin, and there's a person kind of in the, you know, they had the pit audience in the middle. She like whips it, and it hits a person. And I'm like, that, the person probably was fine, but the python didn't want to get hit into people.
No, I'm sure the snake was drugged. She said later she was terrified of the whole thing, but you don't read that on her face at all.
Not once.
The tiger definitely looked drugged. It's just kind of hanging out in the cage. And Doc Antle, huge piece of shit. If you've watched Tiger King, couldn't be a bigger piece of shit.
They, you know, as bad as, what's his face? Joe Tiger? Joe Exotic. You know what? We've been in quarantine so long, I don't remember the guy's name.
It's Joe Exotic. Joe Tiger isn't any more ridiculous, so.
It's equally dumb. But they, you know, that was all well and good to do a series on him. They need to do like a Nexium cult series on... Not that Doc Antle was a cult, but...
I think he could be running one, judging by the brainwashing that the women that work for him seem to be undergoing. Speaking of Dancing with the Stars, Carol Baskins.
Oh, her... So I watched her clip on Facebook.
That's what I watched, too.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yikes.
I was like, what is going on? And I'm like, that's Carol Baskins. He's like, for real? I think he thought it was like an SNL thing.
It's like, I think they said she got the second lowest marks in the show's history. I don't watch the show, but I guess I read you can get 30 points. She got 11.
It
is so bad.
I mean, I guess she's upright, so that's a couple of points. And she reasonably did moves. But you can tell they choreographed it so she'd kind of stand there and the dude would spin around her versus AJ McLean, who has amazing moves.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure he's great. Also, it was to Eye of the Tiger, a little too on the nose. But what's even more insane is her ex-husband's family took out ads during the debut asking the public for any information about his murder and disappearance and saying that Carol was involved. The first one aired right after she danced.
You know what? ABC's playing both sides of the fence.
Yes, they are. They're getting paid by everyone involved. But I was like, that is ballsy to a whole new level.
Well, smart though, you got eyes on her.
Yeah, there's been some stuff that's come out recently about that too.
Oh yeah.
Britney's fame and bank accounts continued to grow. She landed a deal as the new Pepsi spokesperson in 2001, an opportunity that years later would have her playing a sexy gladiator alongside fellow female icons Beyonce, Pink, and Fergie in one of the most popular commercials of Super Bowl 2004. In 2002, Forbes declared her the most powerful celebrity of the year on their Celebrity 100 list after she earned a reported $39.2 million and was featured in over 25,000 news items. For some perspective, number two that year was Tiger Woods.
Whoa. Yeah.
Yeah.
First of all, I just want to say I love Pink.
Pink's great.
Oh, I got to go see her concert when she came through Dallas, and I just cried.
You know who else was at that concert?
Amazing. Who?
My father-in-law.
Why?
Was he, or was it Lady Gaga?
Oh, yeah.
It was somebody who was dating. They went, but I think it was Pink. I don't remember. Whichever one it was, he said it was great.
It's such a good show, because she does, like, the silks and stuff, where she, like, spins from the ceiling.
Yeah, yeah.
Gosh, she's so good.
She's good. Yeah. And she also seems just, like, a really down-to-earth, keeping it real person, which I really appreciate. Britney's career was taking off like a rocket, and her personal life was just as great. She had begun dating NSYNC heartthrob Justin Timberlake, and the pair was considered America's sweethearts. Britney has even said Justin was her first kiss at the impressionable age of 13. Sadly, her home life was not as ideal. Her father, Jamie Spears, struggled with alcoholism. He and Britney's mom, Lynn, fought frequently and finally divorced in 2002 after 30 years of marriage. Britney told People magazine,
"My mom and dad, bottom line, do not get along."
Justin, can we just take a second to just a moment of silence to appreciate the man, the myth, the legend, everything that he is. He is, I'm tearing up, like legitimately tearing up right now, thinking about how much I love Justin Timberlake.
He's so good in so many ways.
In everything he does. Yes. Did he have a little slip up a few months ago when he was drunk in New Orleans and holding that girl's hand? Yes. But he came out and he owned it, and I respect him for that. He can do everything.
Yes. That's what I was like. It's not just like a triple threat, like singing, dancing, acting. Because he can sing, he can dance, he can act, and he can do comedy, and he writes, and he plays instruments, and
a great husband, and he's a great father.
For all the son. Love, I think that, yes, he's a great son. And I think a big part of him being so successful is he's got a really good relationship with his mother, and she's like very caring. But I will say, for as much as I love the Backstreet Boys, and I have a 15-minute slide deck I can present to you about why they are the quintessential boy band. Like, they deliver on the boy band premise greater than any other boy band that's ever existed. And I got some slides to tell you. None of them are even a fraction of as talented as Justin Timberlake. He is just that good. Yeah. His voice, his range, he can rap, he can sing, he can croon. The dancing.
Oh,
but,
God.
And all his, I'm a huge Lonely Island fan, and all his stuff with Lonely Island, he's so good.
He's so funny. He slays every time he's on SNL. He's one of the few hosts that if he is in New York and he has a standing invitation to just drop by and do whatever, like Alec Baldwin, because they kill it every time they're on there.
So good.
Oh, yes. And to imagine your first kiss is Justin Timberlake.
Well, my first kiss is Nick Carter, so whatever.
out of a magazine?
No, when I was a kid, my mom was friends with someone who was friends with their bodyguards, and we went and met them, and Nick gave me a big hug, and then we kissed each other on the cheek.
What? That really happened?
I didn't know this. No, it was the first boy whose mouth my mouth touched.
Oh, wow.
I didn't kiss him on the mouth. We kissed each other on the cheeks.
Well, that's still impressive. Mine was a guy named Matt at a church lock-in. Who I don't know where the hell he is now. He wasn't in a boy band. Oh, that's
no Nick Carter.
No,
I turned on Nick Carter's solo album again. I love Nick. I love the Backstreet Boys. It is such trash pop music, but I love it so much. And I know every word to it. And I told Paris, I was like, if I'm ever in a coma and you need to revive me, turn on Is It Saturday Yet from Nick Carter's Now or Never CD. And Paris was like, I don't know what that is. I was like, no one does. No one has.
That's
that
how
CD.
You know that. Like, if you're ever abducted, and I'm like, put Heather on the phone, and your abductor's like, this is Heather. I'm like, Heather, recite all of the words to Is It Saturday Yet? And they're like, what is that? And I'm like, I told you, it's not her.
Oh, I can, no, it's in my head. I can sing it
I've
all.
Never heard it. I have no it's idea what the song is.
It's so embarrassing. It's so dumb. You can listen to it offline.
I will. I for sure will. Despite her success, pop life was also not all it was cracked up to be. Reportedly, Britney was only given an hour off every day for downtime due to her hectic schedule. She was also allegedly a perfectionist and was known to seek out the approval of others, especially her parents. Even though she was a megastar, Britney didn't always love the limelight. In an interview shown on the YouTube show Ms. Mojo, Britney said,
I'm a shy person and I'm not really made for this industry because I'm so shy.
Her shyness was perhaps mistaken for an ability to be controlled, as her team was in charge of choosing every aspect of her career, including clothes and underwear, according to Miss Mojo.
You can kind of see at this starting to get at this level after the Oops, I Did It Again, and she's just really taken off. Her whole life is now controlled, and it's almost like the genie's out of the lamp, and she's like, I didn't know it would be like this. And it's kind of too late.
You also strip a child of their ability to make decisions and really formulate like their own opinions or be able to. I mean, that's like with any, I read a lot of parenting books, but like if you start doing that shit at a super young age, like because you think you're helping your kid and all that, you're not allowing them to know what it's like to fail. And failure is how we learn and make decisions and set ourselves up for success in the future. So now she's a 7-year-old person. And she's hardly made a decision for herself since she was 16 years old. Younger, really.
So you mean like at this point, it's like whatever she ate, I'm sure they probably pre-catered it. But even before that, like, okay, well, you're going to do this show now. We're going to have you do this.
Yeah. You're told where to be, at what time, what you're going to do. This is what you're going to wear, even your underwear. I mean, you don't have the skills to just exist in daily life like most people do. You become so dependable that you can't survive without your team, which is what I think a lot of these situations they want. They don't want the star to be able to go off and do their own thing, because then they're not needed anymore.
That's true. And I mean, the idea that you just wake up in the morning and your day is kind of planned, also that kind of has a benefit, right? You're like, oh, I don't have to think. I can go create. Sure. I can go be creative. But if somebody was picking out their clothes, they need to get fired for picking out that freaking denim outfit that her and Justin wore. Good Lord.
That was a look. That was definitely a look.
A Canadian tuxedo. Mm-hmm.
In 2002, Brittany and Justin's relationship ended, allegedly because Brittany was unfaithful. This portrayal supposedly entitled JT's Cry Me a River, which featured a Brittany lookalike in the music video. At the time, Brittany told journalist Diane Sawyer of the incident.
I think everyone has a side of their story.
However, despite the turmoil in her personal life, her career was still on track. She performed a show-stopping rendition of Like a Virgin alongside Madonna and Christina Aguilera on the 2003 VMAs. She then released another hit album, In the Zone, a commercial and critical success that produced singles like Me Against the Music and Toxic. While Britney had been previously nominated 8 times, Toxic also gave the Princess of Pop her only Grammy win, taking home the Golden Gramophone for Best Dance Recording.
I remember that Madonna, Christina Aguilera performance.
Yeah, that was, I think I read an article that said that was one of the highest rated viewings of all time on MTV. It's gone down as like one of the sexiest performances. She kind of made these groundbreaking, iconic moves on VMA. Her career kind of like every time she was on the VMA, she would have something like epic and, you know, just like show-stopping happen.
That's how it was where, yeah, every year everyone's like, what's she going to do mm-hmm, this year? Last mm-hmm. year was the Python and the Tiger. This year it was Madonna. It kind of, you start setting yourself a bar where, like you said, failure is how you learn. But every year you're just blowing yourself out of the water mm-hmm. from last year.
Mm-hmm. While Britney's career seemed unstoppable, her personal life seemed to be deteriorating further. In January of 2004, she shocked family, friends, and fans when she married her childhood friend Jason Alexander, not that one, at a drive-thru wedding chapel in Las Vegas. However, just 55 hours later, Britney petitioned a court to annul the marriage, telling the judge she
lacked understanding of my actions.
I think Lynn Spears and Jamie Spears got on a plane and said, you don't know what your actions are. You better mm-mm. get to a judge stat.
They were like, I'm sure with the annulment, you have to say that you didn't consummate the marriage. And I mean, obviously the judge allowed them to annul it. Because can you imagine, as rich as she was at the time, now we'll get into her estate planning later. This is January 2004. I think in March of that year, all of her assets got put into a trust, a revocable living trust, which is very smart, but it would tell me that it didn't exist before that.
Mm-hmm.
And you got all this cash, all this money, and you just got married to somebody who's going to try to ask for half of it at some point. And, you know, her parents were like, whoa! So yeah, all her crap got put into a trust pretty much right after
yeah.
this.
Yeah. And beyond that, I think a lot of people were just shocked that he was just her friend. You mm-hmm. would think someone this mega icon would be marrying Justin Timberlake or, you know, another mm-hmm. another megastar. But it was like Jason, the guy from Seinfeld. And everybody's like, no, it's not that Jason Alexander.
The Summer of George.
What a marriage. I ship that whole thing. Yeah.
They're America's sweethearts after that. For sure. But that's, I wonder, you know, now. Obviously, in part 2, we'll kind of get into her attempts for freedom. You wonder if mm-hmm. every move is controlled back then. And her buddy from childhood said, you know, if you were my wife, I'd let you do anything you wanted.
Or she's just like, I'm like anybody. It's a teenager. She's not really a teenager at this point, but she didn't really have a normal teenage life. You just want to rebel. You want to do something that you're like, this was my decision. I'm mm-hmm. deciding to do this. No one else is telling me. Maybe I'll piss a bunch of people off, but it's still my decision. Just 6 months later, following a canceled tour due to knee surgery, Britney got engaged to Kevin Federline, a dancer who she had known for 3 months. The two agreed to a reality show called Britney and Kevin, Chaotic, which documented their relationship and saw them married in a non-legally binding ceremony in September of 2004. 3 weeks later, upon finalizing the prenup, the couple was officially hitched. At the time, K-Fed said in their reality show regarding the marriage,
"Worked out pretty good."
Brittany, however, later told the Daily Telegraph that the reality series was
probably the worst thing I've done in my career.
That makes me laugh out loud. I mean, first of all, I watched this.
Mm-hmm.
Chaotic 100% was an accurate name for it.
Watching them talk to each other and just in general how they talked. And that particular clip, he's like, "Worked out pretty good. It's perfect." She's like, "Yeah, baby, it's perfect. It's perfect. It's perfect, isn't it?" He's like, "Oh, yeah, it's perfect." It makes me think of Ron Swanson and Tammy, too.
Mm-hmm.
They're just like, "Oh, no, no, I want to get in your face." Oh, and then, obviously, at other times, we're like screaming and they're in each other's faces. So chaotic was the right word.
It was, yeah. And again, you know, she's, at least in the documentary, it's just them and their bodyguards and camera mm-hmm. crew going around everywhere. So she doesn't really have, at least that you see, people telling her what to do, managing her every move. It's kind of just a free-for-all. She, at the time, was living her best life.
Mm-hmm. I think you're happy. You get probably mom and dad or whoever manager kind of off your back and say, "It's me and my husband. Leave us alone."
Mm-hmm. Brittany and K-Fed had two children, Sean Preston Federline, born September 14, 2005, and Jaden James Federline, born September 12, 2006. Brittany was widely criticized in February of 2006 for photos that showed her driving while holding her son, Sean, in her lap, a move she blamed on a scary moment with the paparazzi, and later admitted was not smart on her part. Later that year, in November of 2006, Brittany and K-Fed divorced, citing irreconcilable differences. In the Ms. Mojo video, The Heartbreaking Life of Britney Spears, Brittany said,
"I think I married for all the wrong reasons instead of following my heart. I just did it for just like the idea of everything."
Brittany was reportedly ordered to pay K-Fed $20,000 per month for child support and was ordered to undergo random drug and alcohol screening as part of a nasty custody battle.
This was, I remember, you know, she had kind of stopped after the knee surgery and then she got married, had the kids. She wasn't ever really in the news for the art that she was making or being on tour or new music video. So it was always paparazzi finding her at her worst, you know, she's in sweats or whatever, no makeup and looking frightened. And that's what kind of she said happened with the baby driving incident.
Yeah, she was always in Us Weekly or Star or anything for, "Look how much weight she's gained. Look how trashy she is. She's just white trash." This is around the time when the infamous picture of her walking barefoot into the gas station that we recently... Yes. Was that on a mixed bag we talked about that?
Did we?
We talked about it on something. Runs together at some point. But she definitely wasn't making headlines for her chart-topping records or anything like that anymore. And again, at the time, you're like, "God, Brittany, get it together." But now looking back, when you know all of this, if anyone took a picture of how I look right now, first of all, I'm sweating. So I have my shirt tucked up under my boobs. I'm not wearing a bra. I haven't washed my hair in 3 days. I'm also pregnant. Like,
yeah.
You just want to be yourself every now and then.
Thank God for masks. Because when I go out in public, I'm like, someone DM'd and was like, "I think I saw you out at a restaurant in Deep Ellum." I was like, "No, you did not," because I don't wear pants anymore. And that's illegal to go to that. But I was like, "You'll know it's me because, you know, I have my Heather necklace." And I'm like, I wear like two masks, Larry David or Judge Judy. But thankfully, I can cover my face because I don't wear makeup anymore. My hair's like greasy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, on Zoom, I can reasonably... I was doing all my new job stuff on Zoom and my hair is like so oily, it looks dark. And then when I had to go to the office to pick up my computer, I washed it and the girl I was on Zoom with goes, "Your hair looks so much lighter in person." I was like, "Yeah, it's the cameras. It was the cameras, not the 5 days of grease buildup." But you take for granted that, like, also, even on our best days, I love you and I love me. And I think we're both, you know, happy, strong, beautiful women. And on our best days, we never look like Britney did on Slave for You.
Mm-mm.
And so you set, or how she looks in Oops, I Did It Again video or the Toxic video. So you, the community, the world sets these standards of like, "Oh, well, that's how you look." It's like, that's how she looked at one day for 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how you look.
After having a team of people do her makeup and hair and trainers and sculpting and yeah, but just to roll out of bed and expect people to look like that, no. Celebrity or not, it's unreasonable. And that's why young girls and boys grew up thinking this is how you look. This is what it means to be beautiful. And that's a dangerous, dangerous cycle that leads into all sorts of stuff.
You know, it puts her, you know, like you said, people don't live in a vacuum. You know, I'm sure she heard the things that people were saying about her. And think, oh, my God, I am white trash. I'm so ugly. Oh, I am fat or whatever. And it's like, no, you're fine. You're normal. It's okay to be normal.
You're a normal person.
In the 2000s, it was sharks. We were monsters. Yeah. There was not as much body positivity as we have now.
No. And celebrities, too, aren't given the luxury of you can be normal.
Mm-hmm.
It's no, you've set this standard for yourself. And we all expect you to look like this 24/7 because it makes us uncomfortable when you don't. Therefore, you got to keep it up.
I will say, I think that social media has at least pulled that curtain back. There's Salma Hayek posts a ton of selfies with no makeup on. Of course, she looks beautiful, or Chrissy Teigen, or whoever. There's a lot of, or Lizzo, there's a lot of people, I think, that let you pink post a lot of photos with no makeup on that are like, this is normal. This is what I look like every day. It's not all like what you see on TV. And I think that's helpful.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Also, I think it takes the power away from the paparazzi of like, we cut you with no makeup. It's like, cool, I posted a 5-minute video of me talking with no makeup.
Yeah.
Too late.
Yep. In January of 2007, Britney's aunt, with whom she was extremely close, Sandra Covington, died of ovarian cancer. A few weeks later, Britney briefly checked into a drug rehabilitation center in Antigua, but left after less than 24 hours. The next day, paparazzi spotted the superstar at a Los Angeles hair salon. Photos showed her using electric clippers to shave off her iconic blonde hair. When asked why, she said,
I don't want anyone touching me. I'm tired of everyone touching me.
Upon leaving the salon with a freshly shaved head, Britney then attacked a photographer's car with an umbrella, an image that was captured by said photographer, and is one that people across the world have burned in their brains to this day. Brian, Britney's brother, told The Latch that the entire situation was
scary.
And that their family was
caught by surprise.
You know, not a lot of people know that Britney has an older brother named Brian, but she does. It's not just Britney and Jamie Lynn.
He's been popping up recently in the news.
Yeah. That was a moment.
That was very famous. Mm-hmm. Like you said, burned in my brain. If you say Britney umbrella, I can shut my eyes and see it.
Oh, sure. Yeah, immediately. And, you know, again, at the time, everyone's just like, Britney's crazy. What is she doing? To see someone struggling like that and to just immediately make fun of them and it becomes a meme. Were memes back then? I don't know. It would be now. Yeah. Very few people were like, she is clearly struggling with some sort of mental health. Something is going on. She's not emotionally well. It was just, oh, look at all this crazy stuff she's doing.
Yeah, I would hope that if, and maybe Kanye is like an example when he started kind of lashing out and Kim says, listen, he's struggling. I'm trying to help him. You know, leave us alone. Give us a minute. But I would hope that if we saw actions like this now that, I mean, there are still mean-spirited assholes out there that would be like, Britney in the umbrella. But I think if something similar to this happened today, I think hopefully we as a society have slightly evolved in the last 13 years to say, oh my God, that your first reaction is like, oh my God, someone should check on her.
Yeah.
Not, haha, what a nut. Blah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Kanye, I think the situation with Kanye is kind of, like you said, Instagram kind of pulls back the veil on that stuff. Even though I don't think he is intentionally trying to clue people in on what's going on, like Kim coming forward and saying, like, he's been diagnosed, where this is what it looks like. And then again, you're like, as mega rich and popular as those people are, they are still people.
Mm-hmm.
They still have the same, maybe not the same struggles you and I have, but they can have the same struggle. Mental health affects whoever. It doesn't care how rich or popular you are. So to see that, like, they are still struggling with the things that anyone can struggle with there. So, yeah, give them some time.
Yeah, I mean, that's health, mental health, physical health, and age and time comes for us all. It doesn't matter how famous you are. And, you know, at the end of the day, Kim Kardashian West is a person whose husband is losing the battle with a mental illness.
Yeah. And it's very sad to watch.
Mm-hmm.
I went down a Kardashian rabbit hole.
Oh, because
the
they got
night.
They shut it down, right?
The show, their last season is next year. I haven't watched this show in years. I watched it when it first came out. But I guess in the most recent season, Courtney and Kim get into this, like, physical fight.
Whoa.
So I watched it, and they do get into, like, a physical fight with each other. They just treat each other like shit a lot of the times on that show. But then I just went down a rabbit hole of how it got to be that way, how their looks over the years, to see how all of them have transformed from, I think it was 2004, around there when that show first came out, like, to see how Chloe first was seen on TV to now, she does not look like the same person.
Mm-mm.
It is wild.
The Jenner kids don't, the Kylie and Kendall. That's the one. My goodness.
Kylie has really had a lot of work done to resemble Kim more and more. Kendall has more of the natural beauty kind of look.
Well, and people will message, you know, back when Kim Kardashian was like, I want to go to law school. People are like, look at this big idiot. I'm like, hey, man, if she wants to try and do a thing, she's very passionate about wrongful incarceration, very passionate anti-death penalty. And I've listened to interviews with her talking about cases. She grasps the legal concepts. I mean, she really is. She's doing the, what do you call it, apprenticeship. She's clearly taking it seriously. I don't know, you know, so now with the Kanye stuff may have distracted her a little bit. But the interviews I heard where she talks about the stuff that she's passionate about, she seems to be on it.
You can't make $900 million a year and be an idiot.
Yeah. I was like, people are like, well, she's, and she does have, I mean, you can sell the teas or whatever, like, oh, suck this sucker and you lose 50 pounds. Like, come on now. But going into that, if that's what you want to spend your time is helping people get out of jail, I'm not going to shame a woman for wanting to do that. That's a pretty noble cause.
I think I should correct myself. I don't think she doesn't make $900 million a year. Her net worth is $900 million. Because I went down this whole thing of the siblings and the mom who makes the most. So she clearly makes the most at $900 million, even though Kanye, like, tweeted that she was a billionaire. Forbes has said she's really not quite a billionaire yet. Who do you think is the second most rich?
The lipstick one.
Yeah.
Who sells? Yeah.
Kylie.
That's
she
one.
Makes just, her net worth is just under $900 million. So Kim is 39. Kylie is, early 20s. I don't even know. So imagine, like, Kim's worked twice as long to get to that. And yeah, it's because she, that makeup line, they both make the majority of their money off their makeup lines.
Genius. That's genius, man.
But then the next one is Chloe, and it's like 41 million. It's this huge jump.
Damn. I mean, that ain't nothing.
But. Oh, hell, of course not. But I imagine, like, that family has so many issues going on. And when you just, when money is so important to you like that, and you're just looking at, like, how much each other makes and comparing yourself in the competition.
For anybody that says Kim Kardashian's dumb, I'm like, that woman made $900 million starting off with a sex tape. Mm. Point to me one other person that's done that. I mean, she didn't win the lottery, right? Like,
you
that's
haven't
all...
seen mine. Okay. All right.
You gonna set up an OnlyFans?
Yeah.
It's just that one video.
It's one video. It's it's pretty, it's graphic. It's eye opening. It's gonna 900 million is gonna be chump change when my sex tape comes out. My tape. That's the thing. I'm gonna release the tape and no one can watch it because everyone's like, what do we do with this?
It's a big ass VHS with the Polaroid cardboard sleeve.
Teenagers everywhere are like, what is this? I don't know what is this thing? Is this a phone?
There's boobs in there. Make it work, man. Oh God.
Well, later that year, Brittany lost physical custody of Sean and Jaden. The court records were not made public, so there was no reason given in the media. That same month, in October of 2007, she released Blackout, which included the songs Gimme More and Piece of Me. While the album was another hit for her and considered by some critics to be the best work of her career, it wasn't heavily promoted like her previous albums, presumably because of what was occurring in her personal life. There were no media interviews, talk show appearances, or a supporting tour. In fact, the only televised performance promoting the album was at the 2007 VMAs, a spectacle that was universally criticized for being under-rehearsed, lackluster, and ultimately one of the lowest moments of Britney's career.
This was a setup.
Oh, man.
The 2000 VMAs.
So cringy.
Was a setup.
I watched recently both the performance and the rehearsal of the performance. The rehearsal is just as bad as the performance. So MTV clearly knew, unless she said, I'm going to get it together for the performance. I'm just not putting everything I have into it for this. Or they said, well, this is going to be a shit show, but the ratings are going to go through the roof.
I think it was the second one because I think that they were choosing to zoom in on certain celebrities. Mm-hmm. Like Rihanna is kind of making a face and Diddy's making a face.
Oh, man.
And so it's like, I think MTV was trying to get ratings. And it was like, we're either going to get ratings because it's going to be an epic performance or it's going to be an epic fail.
Yeah.
You know, and then like play the clips. I think it was a setup.
Unfortunately, it was an epic fail. It is. But when at the time you're just like, God, Britney, get it together. What are you doing? Are you on drugs? And you're like, now you're like, yeah, probably. Her kids had just been taken from her.
Yes.
She probably was on drugs, like self-medicating or by a psychologist or whatever, just to cope.
Well, and you can just see she doesn't really have a lot of rhythm. She's not physically moving a lot. It doesn't seem like she can. She has to get like help stepping. Mm-hmm. You know, she steps down on somebody's back and steps, but you can tell it's kind of a struggle. And she's kind of, it's like she wants to do it, but doesn't maybe have the ability to do it. It's very upsetting to watch.
There's
and I'm like,
no
someone
passion.
Should have told her. No, they should have just said, just stay home. Like,
yeah.
You're fine.
There's no passion. It's, she's just going. It's almost like when you first learn a routine.
Yeah.
And you're just kind of going through the steps and the motion. But yeah, it was.
Well, she hadn't been on tour, so she hadn't really been working. So mm-hmm. You're coming from like being off for several years, having a couple of kids, and it's like, okay, now you have to go do crazy dance moves.
In your bra and underwear, essentially.
Yes.
As 2007 was one of the toughest years for Britney, it is not surprising she broke the Guinness record for most searched person on the internet, a title she would again earn in 2009. Paris Hilton's return to reality TV in 2008 briefly stripped Britney of the award. That's not a... I guess that could be an award that's very good, but it could also be an award that is very bad.
It depends on what's at the end of Britney Spears. Like,
yeah.
It's like Britney Spears meltdown, Britney Spears problem, Britney Spears bad performance, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
That sucks.
3 months later, in January of 2008, things in the pop star's life went from bad to worse. KFED's reps came to retrieve the boys after a visit and reunite them with their dad. However, Britney refused to let the children go. Officers were called, and when they arrived, they found Britney behaving strangely, possibly under the influence of a substance. Because of this incident, her visitation rights were suspended. Worse than that, KFED was also given sole physical and legal custody of the children. Due to her behavior and interactions with KFED's assistant and the police, Britney was put on a 5150 psychiatric hold and committed to the mental institution at UCLA Hospital. Typically, a 5150 is an involuntary hold for 72 hours. However, Britney was released the next day. But just a few weeks later, on January 31st, Britney was placed under a second 5150, with rumors circulating that her family had been secretly working with the LAPD to get her back in the hospital.
Also a setup, I think.
This is also a very sad picture that everyone can remember her being wheeled out on that gurney. Mm-hmm. And the paparazzi caught the picture. Again, like, the paparazzi is there in an instant.
Mm-hmm.
They're just they just wait outside the gates of these megastars' homes for anything to happen. And somebody tips them off or whatever. But yeah, she's clearly very upset. She's on a gurney in the ambulance. When they came to get the kids, one of the kids, the nanny had already put in the car. And the other one, she locked herself in her bathroom with. And just to put yourself in the mental state of a mom that is willing to do that because she's so distraught and has nothing. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. That's what you're choosing to do.
And you're going off by, you know, the police said, oh, well, she's kind of acting weird. We think she's on something. Well, it's like, okay, I get it. You're out patrolling the streets every day. Perhaps you know the signs. I mean, you can tell, you can do some field sobriety tests and stuff. But to go, all right, come lock her up. for 72 hours. You know, I mean, we don't have the police report. We weren't there. For all we know, she's like, I'm going to burn this house down with the
kids
in it.
I'm going to kill myself. Yeah. Is that what has to happen to get... Because from what I read of these 5150, it's involuntary.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going whether you like it or not. The typical mandatory hold is 72 hours. She, because she's probably Britney Spears, got out the next day. But what... She does not have the conservatorship yet. How would one be committed to a 5150? Is it because you're saying, I am going to kill myself, I'm going to kill my kids, it has to be something that severe?
Yeah, usually it's the exact statute in the Welfare and Institutions Code is, when a person, as a result of a mental health disorder, is a danger to others or to themselves, or is gravely disabled, a peace officer or a person in charge of a facility can designate them to be taken into custody for a period of up to 72 hours for assessment, evaluations, and crisis intervention. So it's...
So, like you said, we don't know what was going on there. Because it was like a three-hour ordeal.
Yeah,
from the time the cops came until they took her away. So all sorts of stuff could have been said. I'm sure her family was there saying, like, this kind of stuff's been going on or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also one of those things where, because you are a celebrity and your entire life is documented, these cops knew that she had shaved her head at that place and tried mm-hmm. to bash a paparazzi's window in with an umbrella and, you know, all this stuff. So you wonder how much of it is what is going on in the moment and how much of it is kind of their profile because of their past behavior.
Yeah, they come in with some preconceived mm-hmm, notions and go, mm-hmm. oh, well, of course, you know, she just shaved her head and whacked people with an umbrella. She's probably, mm-hmm. let's cart her off. So, or like I said, we don't have the police report. For all we know, she said, as soon as y'all, you know, leave me with these kids because we're all going to go meet Jesus together or something.
Yeah, true. Citing her delicate mental state, her father petitioned the court for a temporary conservatorship in 2008. Britney initially opposed the conservatorship and attempted to hire her own attorney, but was deemed mentally unfit to select one. Eventually, when she was told the conservatorship was best for her children, she relented. 8 months after the temporary conservatorship was granted, the court made it permanent, giving her father and her lawyer full control over every aspect of her personal and financial life.
Not up until now. Well, I guess I'm an aficionado of 1990s and 2000s pop music. But this is probably the closest to my actual practice area of law, the conservatorship mm-hmm. and like mm-hmm. probate and estate and stuff. And obviously I practice Texas law, but I went down a rabbit hole, as we say, on California conservatorship law. And it is fascinating to me, the comparison between the two states. There's still a relatively high percentage of conservatorships that are granted in California. It's something like 99%. 99% wow. of the time, if you go before the court, they
and say this person is unfit to manage their everyday life.
Yes.
I need to do it.
I believe in Texas it's around 4, the last statistic I could find. So it's a little bit better. And in
4%?
Texas, 4% are denied. So 96% are granted. So the ACLU has come out against this, and in California, it's the California, I think they're a it's like a CANHR, the California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform. They've published a manual that's like how to defend against conservatorships. And in that manual, it talks about the law on conservatorships in California is something like 1,500 pages long. It's two big ass books. One single page in there is about how to prove that a conservatorship is necessary. Wow. The rest of it's all like administration, all this stuff. And so that book and several articles I've read from civil liberty advocates talk about how it's like horrifying how yeah. easily and quickly somebody can slip into one of these. And especially what you read here, where they're petitioning to get her a conservator, to put her in a conservatorship, and she tries to hire her own lawyer, and they go, oh, well, you're loony, so you can't hire your own lawyer. Sorry, mm-hmm. bye. And the court then appoints a conservator lawyer to the person. But half the time, those people get paid the more mm-hmm. there's a conservatorship. So it's like creates this necessary, you know, ethical dilemma. Then there's also the ethical dilemma of are you an advocate who's this gets like way into like dorky legal stuff, but are you an advocate working in the best interest of your client?
Right.
Or are you a zealous advocate for your client? If you're a zealous advocate, you say, hey, man, what do you want? And she goes, I don't want a conservatorship. And you go, all right, we'll oppose it all the way. If you believe that you're working on a best interest standard and you talk to her and you think she's kind of a space cadet, maybe she does need to be under conservatorship. Hey, what do you want to happen? I don't want a conservatorship. Yeah. Well, we hear you, but we're still going to, you know. So you get into these issues of like what's right. The California ethics opinions are split depending on what jurisdiction you're in. So I think it's hopefully at the end of the day, her case will create precedent so that this will not happen to other people. Because she's the highest profile person that this happened to, but she's not the only one. There was a lady in Houston that was in her 80s that had a headache and ended up, the doctors were like, we thought she was talking kind of funny. Anyway, we got her a guardian. Anyway, the guardian sold her house to pay for her medical care. I mean, she's like, I went in with a migraine and my house got sold.
Oh my God. So
you see these things kind of take off like a runaway train, mm-hmm. and a person's raising their hand going, excuse me. And everyone's going, ah, shut up. We already decided you're not, you know, you're incapacitated. Be quiet. When they actually have rights and they should be listened to. Now, Texas has what's called the Ward's Bill of Rights that says, like, here's all the things you can do to fight a conservatorship. And there are some in California. There's rights. But, man, it is you just pray and hope that there's a judge and a court investigator that will actually listen to you. God forbid this happened to you.
Yeah. It's like what we were talking about in the last episode, mm-hmm. the trans Allegheny, like, women were just thrown in there because they were hysterical or whatever. Mm-hmm. And would try, no, I'm not. Or you don't want a lobotomy and you're saying, I'm perfectly fine. I don't need this. Okay. Well, let the doctors talk. Let the lawyers talk. We know better than you. And you're just screaming both mm-hmm. internally and externally that, like, this is my life. You're taking my entire life away from me.
And you feel like nobody is my advocate.
Right. And I think we have it in the second episode, but I'll go ahead and bring it up now. At one point, her dad tries to get the conservatorship permanent, saying that she has early onset dementia.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because it's supposed to be temporary. Well, part of the thing you file is, and I looked at the actual form, and it's so clearly written for an older American who has mental capacity issues. It is not meant for someone with a passing mental disease. It's definitely for someone who is on a downward slope, older Alzheimer's.
Yeah. And then you're like, really? She has early onset dementia? Oh, well, she's released 4 albums. She's gone on 3 tours. She has infinite perfume lines, a lingerie line. She's killing it in her career. She has a Las Vegas residency now. If she is that sick, why are you guys letting her do all this?
Yeah. And that's kind of the catch 22 is because they'll go, well, she's great. We'll get her a tour. No, but she still needs to get, and we get way into, I got a lot of thoughts about this conservatorship, but at least for now, I'll say the other problem is, and when you get these loose standards of like, what exactly is incapacitated? They did a study where they had a group of doctors interview handful of patients. I think it was like 30 patients. It's the form you're talking about is called a GC-335. And that's where they write down if someone has dementia. They did a study that tested the consistency of doctors in diagnosing dementia and mental competency and capacity. They only had a 56% agreement rate, which means when asked, hey, what do you think? They only agreed on half of them. They concluded that it's very subjective. It's idiosyncratic. It depends on the doctor. It also depends on what they're told beforehand by the family members mm-hmm. of like, because God forbid they go, well, mom's just having a good day today, but normally she's a lot worse. And mm-hmm. you just go ahead and mark them as incompetent. But then when they changed it and they said, okay, here's 15 different things or whatever, 10 different things you have to test for, when there was a subjective thing to check off, like boxes to check off, that the consistency jumped to 76%. Of agreement, mm-hmm. but California does not have a strong, doesn't have a standard set for what this capacity question is. So if you have a doctor who's willing to sign a thing saying that they're demented,
mm-hmm.
that's what you're going to get. You're going to get them.
Anytime something is subjective, from ice skating scores to something like this, it's like, it's just, so you're just taking somebody's personal opinion and yes. using that to dictate this entire person's life?
And on the flip side, so they tell her, okay, well, you're, so there's like two standards, right? So one standard is, do you need a conservatorship? Because you can't, the exact definition is like, you can't provide for your own, you know, personal safety or whatever. The other side is California has a thing called the Due Process Incompetent Determinations Act, which determines when you're competent to enter into a contract. And based on that, I believe at the time that the conservatorship, the question is like, do they understand the rights, responsibilities, risks, or benefits involved in their decision? I mean, she was like reasonably lucid, like interacting with her parents, asked them to be let out. And the standards they asked were like, do they know what time it is? Do they know where they're at? Do they know who they are? Can they look at, you know, if you said, hey, read this magazine article, could they get through the whole thing? Can they pay attention? I couldn't, so who knows? But can they communicate verbally or even non-verbally? You know, do they understand, you know, quantities? If you said like, is 10 a lot? Is 1,000 a lot? So there's these questions where you're like, oh, this is clearly meant for like someone with significant, maybe like a traumatic brain injury or a significant developmental disability or somebody with significant Alzheimer's or dementia. But I've literally read in that the Cantor had a transcript of a guy who was in his 80s. But you can, I mean, he's totally lucid. And the court goes, well, we still think you need a little bit of help, so we're going to go ahead and get you a conservatorship. And it's like, what you've just done is stripped this person of all their dignity.
Yeah.
And for a pretty weird, nebulous standard that, like, the courts don't really have a standard. So hopefully, I hope for her case, this goes to the California Supreme Court and beyond and sets a standard that says you cannot do this to people. Because there's standards and she's meeting them.
Yeah. And based on those standards you just said, like, if she can't do those things, then again, how is she killing it in her career and is able to get on stage and perform and remember lyrics and remember dance moves and everything and be a businesswoman? Like, those two things don't go hand in hand. You can't have both of those things.
And that's what you start seeing quotes from her dad and from the lawyer that take over that I'm like, you're tipping your hand a little bit.
Yeah.
Where they're like, well, she's doing a lot better. Oh, so we need to cancel the conservatorship. Oh, no, she's bad.
Yeah.
No, she's bad. So. I've been fired up about this, like staying up all night reading.
No, I am too. It really is. Like, once you start getting into it, and again, it's one of those things that this movement kind of started out as just like a social media, like, you know, trending thing. But then when you start really looking into it, you're like, yeah, she needs to be freed.
Yeah. I mean, the ACLU is like, we will help you. I think plenty of lawyers would, and she's finally got one. But this is not a case of, oh, it's the lunatics trying to get out of the asylum. Mm-hmm. And I think some people were trying to paint it as that. When you look at the facts and compare them to the legal standards, in my opinion as a lawyer, and again, don't ever impute anything I say in my employers or anyone but me, but my personal opinion is this was not an appropriate conservatorship.
Yeah, I'm not a lawyer, but I agree. Well, despite her personal life being in shambles, Brittany's career continued to thrive. She guest starred in an episode of How I Met Your Mother, bringing the series its highest ratings ever. Won Best Video, Best Pop Video, and Video of the Year for Piece of Me at the 2008 VMAs. And her documentary, Brittany, for the record, was released on MTV with history-making ratings. Most importantly, though, Brittany came to an agreement with KFED and his attorneys and was allowed some visitation rights with her two sons. In December of 2008, she released the album Circus and embarked on a world tour in support of the record, her first in 4 years. At the time, Brittany understood that the end of her Circus world tour would mark the end of her conservatorship. However, when Live Nation proposed an additional leg of the tour, it also refused to back and ensure their offer without her remaining under the conservatorship. As such, the conservatorship continued.
And then at this time, it was only in California, and then Jamie filed for it in Louisiana. And then they again filed in Florida and filed another one in Hawaii. Pretty much anywhere she would have had property or assets, they filed for.
So the conservatorship is state-based?
Correct. Yes, it's under state law.
So she could come to Texas, and in Texas, she has the freedom to make her own decisions?
Well, first of all, everybody has a freedom to make their own decisions in Texas.
That's true.
But Not on all things, but she would have to get out of California, and good luck doing that.
No, that's a good point, yeah.
You got somebody deciding your every move?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's an abusive relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Over the next decade, Britney Spears would sell millions of records, be featured on hit television shows, and perform a lauded concert residency in Las Vegas. But throughout all this time, Her every move was controlled by her father, Jamie, and lawyer, Andrew Wallet. Then on January 4th, 2019, Brittany announced an indefinite work hiatus, during which she would not perform and would cancel her Las Vegas residency. The official reason Brittany gave in an Instagram post was because her father, Jamie, had suffered a ruptured colon. However, a voicemail from a paralegal revealed that the reason was, in fact, made up. Brittany wasn't even behind the post because, according to a source revealed on the Brittany's Graham podcast, she was actually locked up in a mental facility against her will.
That's where we'll leave you.
Yeah, so what do we think? We've talked a lot about what we think, but anything to add?
Well, I would first like to, as we did with Ray Rivera and Porter Stansberry, I would like to just let Jamie Spears and his lawyer know, I'm a legal aid attorney. I don't have any money. Chrissy's a stay-at-home mom. Please don't sue us. He sued a blogger who...
Who did? Jamie Spears?
Yes, Jamie Spears sued a blogger who said... Brittany's team is, quote, using her social media in a way to negatively portray her and do her harm. This has to be a human rights violation, ? It's based on a gut feeling. So Jamie Spears sued this blogger, according to TMZ, and won, saying that it was defamation and defamed the rest of Brittany's thing. So I would like to say everything I said is an opinion and or same. Backed up by a factual source, so please don't sue me. Also, I think it's a bad look to sue a blogger. Come on, man. It's a fucking blogger. It's not whatever.
So the only worst look is suing podcasters. So yeah. Please don't. Yeah.
Suing poor podcasters.
Yeah, these are all of our opinions. And we cite all of our sources in our show notes. So you can see where we got all of this information if we did not quote it.
If I literally put something in my notes, Chrissy puts in all caps, ? It is stronger than any law review editor I've ever worked under. It is more intense than any law firm partner I've ever worked under. So, yeah, I mean, I think what we're going to see, you know, as the web starts to unwind, that I think it's a runaway train, never going back, runaway on a runaway track.
Man, just that like video, the song. It's just a... side note, that video really messed with me when I was a kid.
Really? I remember just getting like so close to the TV and watching it.
Yeah.
But I think it's one of those situations where she was struggling. And in Texas, at least, we have a law where before you can obtain a guardianship, you have to explore, quote, all the less restrictive alternatives. So you have to explore, put your money all in a trust. Her money was in a trust. Get powers of attorney. I don't know if she had powers of attorney. Get a medical power of attorney. You know, it's so you're supposed to explore every possible thing, and a guardianship or conservatorship, which those are interchangeable. Texas is called a guardianship. California is called a conservatorship. But where that is because it is so, it strips you of like tons of liberties, of like a ton of your constitutional rights, that in theory, that should be like the absolute last resort. And honestly, you see cases where it is necessary, where someone truly cannot provide for themselves. They truly cannot. But we all have the right to make dumbass choices.
Sure.
I mean, as long as she's not hurting her kids and she's not hurting herself, you have the right to marry a douchebag. You have the right to eat garbage. But the question starts becoming, well, where do we as a society want to let the state step in and tell us you really can't eat macaroni and cheese every day for dinner? It's like, yeah, I can.
Well,
I can eat whatever
try
I want.
To tell that to my almost 3-year-old. She'll take your ass to court.
Let her have her mac and cheese. But I think the stakes were super high here. And I think maybe at the time, too, you know, as a dad, you think, well, this is the only thing I can do. But I don't know. I've looked at as many publicly available documents as I can, you know, as many court filings as I can look at. But of course, a lot of it, and it's her right, you know, a lot of the medical stuff has been made private. But she's recently come out and said, hey, make it all public. I don't care. I want you to know what I've been going through so you can tell me, public, society, the people who I've always looked to for validation, help. You know, you love me for so long.
I think that's very telling.
Yeah.
For someone of her stature to say, I'm willing to be as vulnerable as one can be, and you can see everything about me if I could just get my life back.
I think we owe it to her
to
keep our eyes on this situation. And, you know, it sounds like the court is, she's got a good lawyer. It sounds like they are taking it seriously, and we'll get into kind of all that next time. But it's the power of social media, the power of a podcast. It's Brittany's Graham. Those hosts have really, I mean, they just put a ton into just being, you know, fans and, but doing their due diligence and really reaching back out to the source. And once it came out, they, before they published the voicemail, like really went through and vetted it and made sure the person was who they say they were. And I think that was kind of the big catalyst that, that pushed it to the forefront. When you hear a person that you, you admire and you love is locked up against their will, allegedly, you know, you want to look into that. So
sure. And I'm glad that people have. We'll get into even more of the details of this conservatorship and the movement that unveiled on Instagram, her TikTok stories, her alleged possible coded cries for help on her social media, all in the next episode. We love providing Sinisterhood to you at no cost, so if you like what you hear, consider supporting the show by donating to our Patreon. We're a small operation, creating the show for you by researching, writing, recording, and producing it ourselves. Any amount is sincerely appreciated and helps offset the cost of making and hosting the show.
As a thank you, you'll also get some sweet perks like ad-free episodes, a Sinisterhood sticker, membership to our exclusive Patreon Facebook group for those in the Rolling the Airwaves tier, a special shout out on the show, a monthly bonus minisode, and patron exclusive video and audio content like our weekly mix bags where we share three of our favorite things of the week.
You also now have the fun perk of access to our Discord server where you can connect with other fans in real time and discuss the latest in true crime, share personal ghost stories, or just post adorable pictures of your pets. Today, we were asked to create the new channels of memes. Yeah. And reality shows. So I was hell yeah. So it's a little bit of everything and it's super fun. And we'll also be hopping on occasionally to talk and hosting monthly Q&As where you can ask us all your burning questions.
For our patrons not in the U.S., you now have the option to pay in pounds or euros, saving you the cost of conversion fees. Annual memberships for all tiers are also now available. Those that select this option will be rewarded with a free month of membership.
For more details on all of this and specific member tiers, visit sinisterhood.com and click Patreon in the top right corner to join today. And make sure you stick around after our sign-offs to hear your shout-out.
So many of you have been tagging us in pictures of you sporting your sweet Sinisterhood merch. Keep those pictures coming. We recently added a brand new tote bag and socks. If you want to get some cool Sinisterhood swag like socks, totes, t-shirts, mugs, and even clothes for your kiddo, visit sinisterhood.com and click on shop in the top right corner.
The best thing you can do to help us grow is like, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcast. And please tell a friend who you think would like us to check us out. It means so much to us and really helps small podcasts like us get more exposure.
You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Sinisterhood Pod and like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Christy?
I'm on Twitter at Christy or GTFO, and I'm on Instagram at Christy M. Wallace. Heather?
I'm on Instagram at Heather versus the World and on Twitter at MCK versus the World.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Sinisterhood.